How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay them, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King, locked on trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melodies.
Back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Today, it's your boy, Jay King from MassLive.com. I am joined by Kevin O'Connor from The Ringer, one of the top draft experts, the top draft expert, a guy I've been following for years about draft stuff. Used to be a Celtics writer. Now he does great NBA content for The Ringer. We got a long list of topics, some interesting topics, I think. We're going to talk about Jaylen Brown's progression and a tweet Kevin made about Jaylen Brown and Jay Crowder, which I disagreed with part of it, but we'll talk about that. We've got some talk about the draft experts, the draft prospects, rather. Obviously, it's a good time to have a top four pick for the Celtics. And David Griffin, the Cleveland Cavaliers GM, came out on Zach Lowe's podcast and said for a moment at the trade deadline, he thought the Celtics were going to get both Paul George and Jimmy Butler. We will break that down. But first, let's start with Jaylen Brown because the rookie has really played well lately. He's fun to watch, and he's fun to watch partly because he's so sporadic. Like, he will dunk on your head. He will run you over for a charge. He will take shots when when the Celtics should be holding for a last shot. Like, there, it's up and down with Jaylen. But lately, of course, the positives have been a lot better. Since Avery Bradley went down, he has really emerged, really started to play a lot more consistent basketball. Kevin, you tweeted something about if Jaylen Brown isn't better than Jay Crowder already, then he will be soon, and whether that 2 years, 2.5 years, whatever it is you put on Twitter, whatever it is you think, what makes you think that Brown will catch up to Crowder so quickly?
that tweet was met with like a very negative reaction, I think.
You know what? When I tweeted that I disagreed with it, people came at me like Jaylen Brown is already better.
I think you find people on like one extreme or the other, because really, like, the tweet wasn't a knock against Jay Crowder. It was more just a compliment for Jaylen Brown and his progression. And I guess to explain myself, you know, I said by next year. By that, I mean like sometime during the 2018 calendar year. So maybe that's December, maybe it's January. But I just think Jaylen, the way he's developed already this season, right? I think he has some edges over Crowder already. For one, I think he's a more dynamic ball handler, which gives him the ability to create a little bit more off the dribble, which gives him the ability to draw more fouls, get to the free throw line, and granted he's not a good free throw shooter, I think his ability to get there, it does give him an edge, because we're talking about him in a basketball vacuum, not necessarily within his situation, right? So better ball handling skills. I think he's a better passer. I know Jay puts up better assist turnover ratio, but I think that's largely due to the fact that Brown gets called for so many damn charges. I think Brown is quicker laterally on defense. He's better in transition. he's a better athlete than Jay. So look, Jay is a better shooter right now. Jay is a better overall defender because he's more experienced. And he's probably a slightly better rebounder right now. But that's pretty close to a wash, I think. So I think Jay is a better player right now, right? Obviously. But I think in a year and a half, maybe, Brown will be better in a vacuum. Maybe Crowder would still have a better role if he's still on the Celtics. But at the same time, there's a distinct possibility that Brown exceeds Jay at that point just because he's so much more dynamic on offense. And what do the Celtics need? They need another guy who can create offense off the dribble. And Jay isn't that guy. Brown could be soon.
Yeah, so what I really disagreed with about your tweet was the Effie's not already. because like it's clear, I think. I think pretty much everyone would agree that Jaylen Brown has higher potential than Jay Crowder. I don't know if he'll get there. Obviously, like, when you're a rookie, nobody really knows what you'll become. Right now, he does a lot of promising things, but there's still a lot of rough edges to his game. To me, right now, there's a huge gap between Jay Crowder and Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown does a lot of fun stuff. He does some things that very few people can do. But from a consistency basis, from a, like, obviously, somebody tweeted at me, you picked the wrong time to side with Crowder after he got beat by Eric Bledsoe. Well, yeah, that wasn't his finest defensive moment. But for the most part, he's a plus defender who can guard a lot of positions and is a smart defender, which Jaylen Brown has not yet become. Has Jaylen Brown's rookie season changed anything for you about either his floor or his potential based on where you evaluated him in the draft process last year?
I don't think a lot has changed. Honestly, I like Jaylen a lot heading into the draft. Like I was up and down on him at Cal, right? Like I was like in a way riding the roller coaster, which I don't think is a great thing to do. So because like he had stretches where he just looked horrible, where he looked like he had the worst feel for the game. But the thing, like, you know, when you go back and watch those games or even just, you know, individual plays, was that he was in a situation where there was no spacing at Cal. Like he was playing with two bigs on the floor at all time. It was hard for him to breathe on the floor. But anytime he did have spacing, he really shined. So those were the moments I looked at and said, okay, in the NBA, he's going to play with more spacing. And look, I think if anything, maybe he's a little bit more ahead at this point than I expected him to be. Because like, look, Brad Stevens is putting him out there in end of game situations. He's playing fourth quarter minutes. That's partially, I think, Brad just throwing him out there and seeing what happens, like giving him late game experience. I think it's partially that, but I think it also shows some trust from Brad Stevens. So in that sense, Jaylen's a little bit ahead of where I thought, but overall, I still view him as a very high upside prospect, and everything he's shown that year has only solidified that.
Yes, someone tweeted me, or someone, one of my buddies texted me this. He might be listening now. His name's Nick Graham. He texted me this, and I thought it was smart. He said, what Jaylen has changed from his perspective is the floor. Like he's knocking down shots at a pretty high rate. And if you talk to the people in the Celtics organization, they'll tell you that it's not just that he's shooting a better percentage in the games, because that's obviously a small sample size, might not be indicative of what's real, but his numbers in practice, his numbers across the board, And they keep track of those things, have really risen, and he is actually developing as a shooter in the ways they had hoped. So that's all promising. And since he is becoming probably already right now a better shooter than a lot of people thought he'd be as a rookie, he's shooting like something like 55% from the corners. Above the break still hasn't been good, but there's a lot of time to develop that. And then defensively, you know, they're throwing him out there at the end of fourth quarters. He's the one who subs in for Isaiah Thomas a lot when they take Isaiah Thomas out for offense defense purposes, and like he's come a long way. Avery Bradley said something funny the other night. He said, you know, Jaylen has really, really progressed defensively, and he said, I asked him what the area where he really progressed is. He said, well, staying with his man. that's a pretty rookie thing when you're not staying with your man, and it says a lot about him that they are trusting him, because Brad Stevens doesn't play favorites. Like he's not going to just give a rookie minutes because he's a rookie, and he really has progressed defensively. Let's get to some of the draft prospects now. I went to see Lonzo Ball the other night, and he's just fun, man. Is he the best passer you've evaluated in the last however many years you've been doing the draft guides?
Man, like, he's got to be, right? I think his basketball IQ is just off the charts. Off the charts, his passing vision, off the charts, his feel for the game, off the charts. Like, he is, like, an outlier in those specific categories. He's, like, he has his flaws, right? You know, there's questions about his jump shot, but there's no denying that he's going to become a guy who is a serious threat as a passer in the pick and roll, or somebody who is just dominant passing in transition. I think depending on the type of point guard a team wants in their offense, if they want more facilitator, like if they have primary scorers at the forward positions, maybe Lonzo Ball is perfect for that type of situation because of how good he is as a passer. And because I think there's no question he'll have no issues shooting off the catch either.
Yeah, he's so fun to watch, man. And
it's awesome.
What's funnest for me watching him is he doesn't just hunt assists. Like, he puts up huge assist numbers, but he would just throw the ball up to an open guy on the fast break and let the other guy make a play. Like, it's not like he's like one of these selfish assist guys. He is one of the most unselfish, and he just finds guys. It's fun to watch. Has he changed for you whether Markel Fultz is number one at all, or is there a debate there for you who's number one?
So one quick note on the passing, like you hit the nail on the head there. Like, he is so unselfish, and like, that's kind of, you know, my thing with Ben Simmons. Like, he's a spectacular passer, but there were so many times in college where he would have a clear outlet pass and he was instead like hunt out an assist by dribbling the ball up the court himself. And Lonzo Ball is just unbelievable in every single category you can ever imagine as a passer. And yes, in that sense, he has closed the gap on Fultz, because I came in this year, honestly, not even loving Ball. Like, you know, you watch him at lower levels and it's like, okay, there's a lot to like here. But at the same time, that jump shot is so ugly. It's like a sidewinding slingshot shot. I highly recommend typing in Lonzo Ball highlights in YouTube and just watching his jump shots. Like, it's very weird looking.
I highly recommend against that.
Yeah, you might go to bed and have nightmares or something like that. But, you know, I think Fultz is still number one for me, Jay. I just see Fultz as just a better overall scorer. And, like, personally, like, if I'm building my team, I want my point guard to be really one of those guys who you can lean on as a scorer in end-of-game situations, more so than the facilitator like Ball. But with that said, Ball, it's not like that ability's not there, right? I mean, he's very good at step back jump shots. He needs to work out some kinks in his shot off when it comes to pulling straight up into his shot. But the ability is there. I just think Fultz, more dynamic as a scorer, better body. I think he'll be better absorbing contact at the rim and getting to the free throw line. And because of his better body, he has naturally more defensive potential than Ball does. Ball is very thin and lean. So I think Fultz definitely is still one for me, but Ball has really come up and closed the gap.
Yeah, it's funny because you talk to a lot of people who were like you before the season, and Ball was like maybe lottery prospect, like later in the lottery. And then it took like just a couple weeks for everyone to be like, whoa, this kid has a gift. And he works hard too. He's a hustler. I like that about him. He lifts everybody up. People say that about a lot of prospects, but his style, like, he just has an energy to him that does, I think, lift up his team. And maybe it won't be that way at the NBA level. Obviously, it's a different game. But, man, that dude can pass. He has a knack for some incredible plays. All right. Celtics, obviously, they're going to have a top four pick. Who would be your number three right now for them? There's like a lot of guys that could be considered at that spot.
Man, like, Jay, this year is so weird. It's like not even just the Celtics, but just in general. I have such a hard time with that third spot. I feel like I change. I mean, I'm at Josh Jackson from Kansas right now, but if you ask me in a week or 2 weeks, maybe that changes a little bit. I just think Jackson, I don't even say that with full confidence, but with Jackson, I just see him as the guy where he's going to be a versatile defender. He's going to be able to defend 1-3 and 1-4 in small ball lineups because he's so aggressive, so quick laterally. He's strong, and offensively, he's a good rebounder, great in transition. He can go coast to coast. What was that noise? Did you hear that?
That was nice. I like that.
Was that on your side or me?
Sound effects.
I couldn't tell if that was like in my left headphone or in my house.
We got sound effects on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
We'll have to cut that. It shook me.
So rattled right now.
Yeah, right. Not off my game. But yeah, so okay, I'll like go back. So with Josh Jackson, I just see him as the guy who defensively he's going to be able to defend 1-3 and 1-4 and when in terms of small ball lineups. But he does more than just defend. He's dynamic ball handler for forward, so he has the ability to create off the dribble, which is valuable in today's offenses that have multi-ball handler, multi-playmakers on the teams. The thing is with him is the shot. He's like 50 to 60% from the free throw line, and his three-point percentage is like nearing 40% at this point, but I don't think that's real. And it's a lot like Justice Winslow or Aaron Gordon a couple years ago, where I just have my type when it comes to forwards, and that is these super athletic, you know, high-intensity defensive forwards who have everything you look for except for the jump shot. And Josh Jackson has that similar mold. And as we've seen with guys like Gordon and Winslow and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist down to the KJ McDaniels of the world, is those guys need that jump shot. And if Jackson doesn't have that, then what is he really? I mean, he'll be a good player, but I don't know if he's a guy you'd want to take with the number three pick. And what you want there is a guy who becomes a super impactful player. And so that's where I struggle, like philosophically, with putting Jackson there, even though there's so much to like about him.
Yeah, and when I saw Josh Jackson for the first time, and I said this about Jaylen Brown to my brothers after I saw him for the first time at Cal. Josh Jackson is a Celtics type of guy. Like, you see him once and you're like, yeah, he's gritty, he's athletic, he can guard multiple positions, he can't shoot. he is definitely a Celtics type of guy. And what's interesting is the Celtics believe that shooting is the most teachable aspect, the most improvable aspect for a prospect.
But they don't have a shooting coach. They don't have a shooting coach, though, on the roster. I don't believe they have a shooting coach, though.
Yeah, but Jay Crowder has improved. He's around 40% now. Avery Bradley, he's around 40% now. Isaiah Thomas has taken a step forward. Marcus Smart isn't quite as horrendous as he used to be. so they do have some guys that have improved quite a bit. And they do feel like shooting is a skill that you can work on and improve. And obviously there are guys who never get better. And like you look at Justice Winslow, and now he's in, you know, his year got cut short. But if he never becomes a good shooter, he's still a great defender. He's still solid passer. He still does a lot of things. But it's just so limiting if you don't get there. And so that's always something to think about. And then how good is Isaac?
So I like Isaac. I just have a couple of questions about him. So I think he's most projectable as like the role player of the three forwards in that group. Jackson from Kansas, Jason Tatum from Duke, and Jonathan Isaac from Florida State. Of those three, I think Isaac is the most projectable as that versatile defender who's a good shooter on the offensive of the floor. So we're talking like a 3-and-D forward type of player, right?
Yep.
I think he has that ability. However, at the same time, like I said, if you're drafting that high with a number three pick or even the number four pick, I think you want that guy who becomes your go-to. And Isaac could have that ability. It could be there. But at Florida State, he hasn't really shown that he's dynamic off the dribble. He attacks closeouts here and there, but primarily his role is like spot up, shoot, and just attack closeouts. I'd like to see him in a situation where he's like Tatum, where he's the go-to presence at the end of games, or Jackson, where they just they lean on him in end of game situations. And Isaac hasn't really had that. Maybe that's because it's just coaching. Maybe they just want to lean on other guys on that roster, but maybe it's because it's not a strength of his at this stage of his career. So with Isaac, that's my kind of hang up with him. He has great ability, super long, so much to like, but does he have the go-to ability, which is really what you want at that stage of the draft?
See, that's what I've been wondering about him, because like the stats love him. I think I read somewhere where he's like second to Lonzo Ball on ESPN's projections moving forward. And he's 6'11" with super long arms. Like, there's a lot to like about that kid. So yeah. I was wondering why there wasn't more talk about him potentially moving up, but you answered that question. The other guy I like is Jason Tatum. What is he close to that 3-4 range for you? And what differentiates him from the Josh Jacksons, the Isaacs?
So at the beginning of the season, I had Tatum at 2, and I think I have him at maybe 4 right now behind Jackson. So I still have him ahead of Isaac. The thing with Tatum is like, so he clearly is the best of the three when it comes to creating off the dribble. He's a super smooth, good ball handler. He already has some advanced moves. But the thing is, he's not as good of an athlete as either of them. He's not as good defensively as either of them, and he's probably not any better as a passer than Isaac is. And Jackson is clearly a better passer. So what Tatum has going for him is the ability to create offense without a screen. He can be that go-to guy. But the problem with him is that he needs to really, really extend his shooting range. Right now, he's mostly a mid-range level shooter. He can shoot a little bit from three. He can shoot off the catch, especially from three. But he needs to extend that range out in order to become that real go-to scoring presence in the NBA. So DeMar DeRozan, for example, is an awesome player. Like, there's no denying that. But even he, I think, could still take his game just to an even higher level if he becomes a guy who could shoot threes. And Tatum needs to do that. Will he? Maybe. And that's why I'm still super high on him, because maybe in the right situation, extending his range is something that'll happen just over the course of time. But if he doesn't, what is he? Because he doesn't do a lot else on the floor. And maybe that's like a maybe slightly better version of Rudy Gay. And I've never been a Rudy Gay guy. And that's where I've just got some issues with Tatum, too. So all those forwards are so appealing, but they all have certain flaws that hold me back from falling in love with them, as I have with Fultz and with Lonzo Ball.
How much of a drop off is there after number two?
So I think we'll look back at this draft 10 years from now and say there was no drop off, and maybe one of those forwards ends up as the best player anyway. But like, from an evaluation standpoint, there kind of is a drop off for me. I think Fultz is clearly the one. Ball has closed the gap on him. But after that, I just have so many questions about all these guys, like every single one of them. They could become stars. They have immense upside, but they all have at least one major wart that sticks out. And you're like, man, if only he didn't have that, he would be really a sure thing.
All right. so much relies on the ping pong balls, man. So much. Markel Fultz, 25% shot at him, you know?
Yeah, it's like 48% chance, I think, they get a top two, something like that.
46.5. So,
statistically,
they're more likely to be third or fourth. But Oof. People freak out if they get third or fourth. And they'll still get a really good player. They'll still be a 50-plus win team, adding a top three or four pick. But Boston will freak out if they don't get a top two pick. It will not be pretty. Okay, so David Griffin today went on Zach Lowe's podcast. I think the conversation probably happened over the weekend at the Sloan conference. But so Zach Lowe asked him about a report that the Cavaliers were on pins and needles about the Celtics maybe getting Jimmy Butler. And he said, well, it wasn't just Butler. For a moment, I thought they were getting Paul George and Jimmy Butler. So that whoa, both of them, huh? And obviously the Celtics would have had to trade. They would have had to unload the chest. Like, they would have had to trade both Brooklyn picks. They would have had to trade probably two or three pieces of their rotation at least. They would have had to maybe dig into, like, Ante Zizic, Gershon Yabusele. They would have had to throw a lot. But whoa. Do you think that's what they're dreaming about, man?
Yeah, I do think they're dreaming big. They're definitely dreaming very, very, very big. And I mean, that's something you and I talked briefly about before the trade deadline, Jane. We're like, is this crazy? Is this like just a crazy scenario? And it is.
It's totally crazy.
But David Griffin knows that Danny Ainge is a big, big thinker, right? And with that in mind, he also knows that they had the assets to theoretically acquire both, right? They theoretically could have given one Nets pick to the Bulls and one Nets pick to the Pacers and then given whatever else it would have taken to make it work, right? Theoretically, they could have. So you can understand why David Griffin had that concern. The thing that really surprises me is that he just came flat out and said that. I mean, that wasn't a thought that many people had. And like, if you did say that, like, if you were on the Celtics Reddit or you were on Celtics blog or Celtics Hub, any website, mass live comments, and you said Celtics are going to go for both Jimmy Butler and Paul George, people would have said, you're stupid, you're biased, you're a homer, right? But David Griffin, the GM, said it.
Yeah, I actually wrote about the possibility. Like obviously, it's a crazy possibility. It's a slim possibility. When you're talking about landing one star, it's tough. When you talk about landing two, now you're like, it's dream world. But I wrote about the possibility and like what it might take. And honestly, like, it's not completely impossible for them to dream about it. And people were just like, okay, you're on drugs. it's time to go to sleep, Jay.
Where can I get some, they're saying.
Exactly. And but here's David Griffin thinking it might have been a real possibility. And what's interesting to me is if you get one of those guys and you have to give up Jay Crowder and Marcus Smart or something and a pick, then there's a chance like you get stuck in purgatory where now you're still not better than the Cavs and you've given up the pick that you had that could have become a superstar. So, but if you get both of them, that's a different story. And now you're competitive with the Cavs for sure. You're at least dreaming about taking down the Warriors when they're at full strength. So, yeah, maybe they're not willing to give up some of those pieces for one of them. Maybe they'd be more willing to part ways with all those pieces if they could get two. And now, you know, there will be different possibilities this summer. Obviously, they'll chase Gordon Hayward with cap space, see what happens there, maybe revisit Butler-George talks. Maybe they'll just keep the number one or number four pick or whatever pick it is and add a top prospect to a team that won 50 games. There's a lot that could happen. But that dream, man, that dream is crazy. That dream.
I mean, it's all about, like, this is the phrase I'm always going to use until the Celtics do something, is it's all about order of operations. Because if they had made the move, let's say they traded Jay Crowder and the Nets pick and Avery Bradley and whatever else for Paul George. Let's just say they did that at the deadline. It would have looked great. Celtics would have probably been a little bit better this year, but they still wouldn't have been close enough. And because they made the trade before the summer, they would have lost the ability to make a move using their cap space because there would be no cap space anymore. But since they waited, they're going to have the ability to create maximum cap space so they can try to make a run at a guy like Gordon Hayward. And then if you do sign Hayward, guess what? You got one star. And then guess what? You still have your assets, and you might be more willing to give up the Jay Crowders of the world, the Avery Bradleys of the world, in order to get that other star. So it's really about the order of operations here. If they sign Hayward and or the other guys that they might be targeting in free agency, and there's honestly not a lot, then they could be more willing to give more to get Jimmy Butler or Paul George. So I think, you know, taking in what David Griffin said, he's aware that the Celtics are thinking really, really big. And general managers know that Danny Ainge is going for something big. And that's what they're planning for. And I think that's ultimately why they waited and passed on any short-term deals, because it's all about winning a title. It's not about putting themselves in the Eastern Conference Finals. It's about winning a title. And they need two guys, not one guy, to get to that next level.
It's crazy to cover the Celtics, because everything's a possibility.
It's so crazy.
is a possibility. Like, ooh, Markelle Fultz is awesome. Well, the Celtics might get him. Paul George and Jimmy Butler might be available. Well, the Celtics are the obvious team to potentially acquire them. It's like every possibility is out there. Every possibility is somewhat realistic. Everybody should go read Kevin's story on Gordon Hayward, who has become a true star. Gordon Hayward is a stud. Gordon Hayward is a high volume, high efficiency, absolute star. And maybe, you know, that's another possibility. So it's crazy to cover the Celtics. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast, Kevin. Always appreciate talking to you. Always appreciate learning from you, and always appreciate when I disagree with you about Jaylen Brown and Jay Crowder and the potential difference between them right now. So thank you very much for coming on, my man.
Thank you so much for having me, Jay. Looking forward to the next time.
Indeed, indeed. All right, for all you listeners out there, we obviously ignored the Celtics-Clippers game today. It was too late. I will be doing work after the game. Sam Packard is on spring break from the University of Pennsylvania, where he is an Ivy Leaguer, believe it or not. And Corrales, he's an old man. He just falls to bed. So that's why we ignored that. We got Kevin instead, which is a lot better than any talk about the Celtics-Clippers game. Thank you for listening. Everybody, subscribe to the Locked On Celtics podcast. Give us a 5-star rating. Everybody, go follow Kevin O'Connor. What is it? At Kevin O'Connor NBA?
Yes, sir.
There you go. Go follow him on Twitter. And yeah, maybe the Celtics will avoid a disastrous road trip after that kick in the balls against the Phoenix Suns. Take care, guys.
Yeah, Jay King and John Corrales. Locked On Celtics. Millie's.